It is the People Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. And our next guest from the province joins us weekly here on Wednesdays and sometimes more often as well. It is Patrick Johnston. What's going on, PJ?
Dan, as long as you don't create a new day, call Wednesday, I'm available.
As long as you're available, that's the important part here for us. We're kind of starting to hear some rumblings that the league is not that they're planning, but you know they are having an eye towards the Canucks returning sometimes at the end of next week potentially. Mm-hmm. As for the Canucks, you know, they come out with the statement today. Where are they at right now with how they are planning to move forward?
Well, I think you're right that they haven't said the day, but certainly I think, you know, there's a tentative notion that the end of next week is likely when they would return, which always made sense to me once you recognized, first of all, how many guys are positive and essentially the rules that go with that. I mean, obviously they're getting tested a lot, but in general, it's sort of, there's that 2-week clearance, seem to be 2 weeks, essentially post-infection to come back. And so then the next week, you know, given that most players obviously tested positive on Friday and Saturday, you know, that kind of gives you, or I guess it was Thursday and Friday now I think about it, but anyway, you know, that gives you a look at sort of how this team may be coming back into the fold. Actually, I guess I said 2 weeks. Essentially, I guess it's 10 days. I always get confused on those things. If you have symptoms, it's 10 days since your last symptoms. That made sense. And I think at this point, you know, it remains very much that everyone essentially been told to stay home and isolate through, I guess, Sunday now. And, I mean, it's a bit TBD is my sense of things, but, you know, we'll see how things progress with everyone. Nate Schmidt now makes it just about every player involved has tested positive at this point. You know, those guys, him and Jake Virtanen will be, I guess, the last guys to come off the protocol list. So it's going to be interesting what that team looks like when it comes back on the ice, assuming everyone comes through this all right. And, of course, there may be some variants to that, and we'll see how they fill out the roster at this point. They haven't called anybody up from Utica. That's still, I think, a possibility, but they still need to get a sense of what their schedule actually looks like and how the players are feeling.
Well, and this has not been an easy thing for reporters like you to report on. And I think, PJ, you've done a great job. I know Trans has worked hard on this. He's done a really good job as well. Considering how hard it is in an information vacuum here, and until today, and I thought it was good that the organization sent out the info today and gave us some more clarity on stuff. I think that makes it easier on that aspect.
Yeah.
And I know people want answers to questions, and they're asking, how did this happen? Did you break protocol? Did this happen? And rumors about this, rumors about that. And I get that people want answers to these sort of things, but it's so hard in this situation when there's public health issues, there's personal health issue, and there's essentially no information coming out that, I'd like to see a thorough report that's transparent about how we got to this point. My question is, will we actually see that?
I think you can already piece a few things together. Like you said, the Canucks, I think to their credit, gave us full statement, a full accounting of the situation, I think as they could. Left a lot of clues. I mean, they referred to a public exposure event, public exposure locale. And if you go to VCH, you can see what that is. And, pointed out that there is one individual, and it's pretty, we know how things played out last week, you know. Avangardet, I think, is, you know, he was the first guy it happened. But, you know, understanding what the protocols are, I think, is important as well. Essentially, the NHL's protocols defer to local health authorities. And nothing that happened, from what I understand, that caused this outbreak was related to any breaking of any rules. Now, the NHL recommended some things, but on the whole, this is a case, I think, of, you know, essentially it could have happened to anyone. And in many ways, the guy that got affected wasn't breaking any rules. Let's, I guess, put it that way. And certainly was doing what was allowed anyone to do in BC right now, or at least, sorry, as of whenever it was, you know, 10 days ago. So there's nothing, you know, you can put it all together. You know, at the end of the day, what happened was the real part of the story, I think, you know, and you can look at it yourself. You can see the fact that essentially everyone who has tested negative to this point, which is essentially all the off-ice guys, weren't on the ice. They had their masks on. And, you know, in compliance with the protocols, which say that when you're off the ice, you're essentially supposed to have your mask on. And so they've been working in areas close to these players who all got it. You know, we do know one support staff got it today, and that could very well be they were wearing a mask. But I think this is also a story about mask wearing and how important that really is, especially now, even with a variant, which we know it is. And there's a lot of, you know, I mean, it goes back to what I was told on the weekend, that they are treating this as a P1 outbreak. And, you know, the more the week has evolved, I know Dr. Henry said yesterday she's not aware of it being a P1, but I think that she was very careful, actually, in the way she chose her words. You know, there is a lot of, my understanding, there's a lot of reasons why they believe it's a P1, just from, like, I don't know if it's related directly to the actual exposure in terms of whether that person has been identified as having P1, but, you know, the evidence all seems to be pointing that direction, and it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of that story unfolds in the coming days, I think.
Yeah, and absolutely just getting to that point of how we got to this point, how it can be avoided in the future, and eventually everybody getting healthy again, and maybe this team plays some games in the future here. But, you know, in the last 24 hours, 48 hours, we've heard the Tanner Pearson contract talks. Apparently they're back on again. What are you hearing on that front? And it felt like they were kind of, you know, in a position of not being restarted maybe a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden we're talking potential 2 to 3 year term here, PJ. How did we get to this point?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think it still remains to be seen. I certainly know it's clear there's interest from the team. I imagine there's interest from the player. I don't know what the numbers that are being discussed. I imagine, just knowing everything else we know, and we've talked about this, the number from the team is pretty firm. So what that all means is an interesting question. I think part of this dynamic is, you know, that Tanner Pearson is a guy that is, I think, well-liked in that room. And I do think, you know, I think we've heard enough about it that, you know, the loss of Tanev and Markstrom, you know, I think was well, we know it was felt in the room. We know that it was a bit of a blow to some of the people there. And, you know, I don't think the main reason is that, you know, this guy holds the room together. He's the glue, anything like that. But it certainly plays a factor in this. I think, you know, they like Tanner Pearson as a player. There's no doubt about that. Now, as Sat pointed out, I think yesterday, right? Sat, you said, well, Jim said they're 2 years away. Why are you doing this deal then? Well, you know, I think that is a very important counterpoint in all this. And, you know, so it doesn't necessarily work in those terms. And, you know, you're running the risk of turning into a similar situation like you're already in with Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel and Brandon Sutter. And, you know, that you've overburdened the bottom part of your lineup. You know, if Tanner Pearson, all things work out, the Tanner Pearson works out, but he really is just a third line winger. Do you really want to be overpaying for that spot? You know, that, which is a mistake you've been guilty of before. There are worse players to make this bet on, but I'm still not convinced it's the right move.
What's an overpay for Tanner Pearson?
Well, I mean, it's so tough to say at this point, but I mean, you look at, you know, I would say, honestly, look at a comparison point like someone like Antoine Roussel, who, you know, I think in the end has sort of gone as bad as you know, it's, his last two seasons have gone as poorly as you could have, you know, you would have worried about. His first season was pretty good. Then that injury just completely kind of put him on his, behind the eight ball. And I think he's just never really recovered from that. You know, as feisty a player as he is, it's not worked out. So I think you really have to look at sort of him as a baseline. And, you know, Pearson's, Pearson's making what, 3.5 right now? You know, let me just pull it up here while I think about it. But, you know, he's a guy that, 3.75. So, you know, I mean, he's a guy that's going to be like, this is what I made last year. You know, the Canucks are going to look and they're going to be, well, we have a flat cap. We have to sign two stars. If you want to stay on this team, certainly I don't imagine he's going to be able to say, well, I deserve the same amount of money. You know, I think you can look and turn around at the same time though and say, well, Jake Bertan's making 2.5. So he'll probably say I'm a more productive player than Antoine Roussel. I mean, I think $3 million could be the number there. We'll see how that plays out. But, you know, it's one of those ones, like I said, I think you need to be cautious here because, you know, is the return for the number that you end up landing him on, if that's what happens, is it actually worth it? Or could you find, you know, Jimmy Vesey, let's remember, Jimmy Vesey signed for $900,000, right? And I'm sure the Canucks would be pointing to that and say, listen, you guys have similar pedigrees. Jimmy Vesey obviously didn't have a great year in Buffalo and wasn't going great in Toronto, but certainly has had seasons in the past that look like Tanner Pearson's, and they'll be like, well, look how much he's making. So, you know, it's complicated. It is a really complicated spot right now. And I certainly hope, you know, the Canucks are learning their lessons and holding their line. They're saying, listen, this is the price. I mean, they've done it before. This is the price. If you want to stay, this is what the price is going to be. And more than likely, it's not going to be a number that's going to be all that appealing to the player, but we'll see.
Patrick Johnson from the province is our guest here on Sportsnet 650 on the People's Show. And, you know, PJ, I made this analogy yesterday, and, you know, I kind of mentioned the same thing, that a big driver here to bring Pearson back is, hey, they lost these guys in a room. That was tough. They're low to lose a couple more guys like this. And the analogy I made was, there's a scene in First Man, the movie about Neil Armstrong. And this is like after all these astronauts have died and testing and all this sort of stuff. And he's involved in a test that he narrowly escapes death in. And then they start asking him, like, at what cost can we have you doing this? And he stops. He says, at what cost? It's too late to be asking that question. You should have asked this question before. Like, if you've already gone down this path of let Markstrom walk, let Tanev walk, you have a two-year plan, let's look towards the future, why would you be that worried about it? Like, if you're already moving forward for 2 years, should the comprehensive plan not be, in 2 years we're a cup contender, or in 2 years we're going to be here, and let's build towards that? Why this fear of losing a guy when you've already lost the two biggest guys you could have lost in Markstrom and Tanev?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Great movie, by the way. First Man is fantastic, and just sort of it really paints a completely different picture of the space program, because we have this heroic notion, everything worked great. Oh, Apollo 13 was just a blip. But really, it's more the anxiety of space flight and how things might shake apart. And, you know, the point is exactly that. Like, you committed to this. Like, we're already at this point. We better carry on. Which, you know, is a little bit risking of bearing over to the sunk cost fallacy. But usually you're talking about, well, I've stuck with this player. I've signed him. I better commit, you know, stick with this player. And usually we're like, well, that's the wrong argument. But you're right. You've picked, you know, they in the end picked a course. I think you're totally right. They picked a course that basically said, no, we're going to be careful in how we spend the money around the edges from here on out. That, you know, they've committed to Thatcher Demko. They said, this is going to be our guy. I think, you know, it was, like I said, I think it's a bet, but it's a bet that has actually had some reasonable chance of success. You know, there've been bets made in the past on players with, on, you know, going into, who are going into free agency, like Ben Hutton, like Sven Berchi, and they didn't work out, especially in Hutton's case, because Hutton was an RFA and they paid a bunch of money and they ended up walking away from him. So, you know, there is a sort of a past, you know, a past here that we shouldn't ignore. Now, I think, you know, the way the contracts negotiations are being dealt with now are, I think they're different than they were. You know, Chris Gere's obviously a big influence there. You know, and so that does change the understanding of the picture, that if there's a desire to keep a player, he's got to be like, well, this is what the cost has to be. And clearly we know that they set a line on Markstrom, and they set a line, well, I mean, did they set a line on Tanner? We don't even know. But we know they set a line on Markstrom. And they weren't willing to go over that. And I think, you know, at the time I said, I commend them for making that hard decision, because it would have been very easy to retain the player, spent too much, overcommitted on a guy that was probably going to still be good for another year or two. Now, obviously, he struggled in Calgary, but still was likely to be good for a couple seasons. But you know, there was so much unknown at the tail end of that contract. You know, good for them for walking away. Pearson's a bit of a different case in that, you know, he's not going to turn around and sign a big deal like that, you know, 2 or 3 years. You know, you can understand the argument, but at the same time, in a flat cap world with the price that he likely is asking for, I'm not sure it's a player that makes sense to commit at this point, especially in the end when you still have to figure out how you're going to get Pettersson and Hughes on board.
Well, PJ, looking beyond this year as well, if you're trying to spend money, if the Canucks are in a position to do so, you're going to have to clear up some space that might be done to through LTIR, depending on what happens with Michael Ferland. Also, maybe even on the Jay Beagle front. But beyond that, you might have to look at buyouts as well. The organization didn't go through with any last year. Does that change this summer? And if so, is there a candidate or two that you're watching to see?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you know, you got to look at, I mean, Jay Beagle, I know there's sort of these reports. I don't know anything about that situation, but obviously these reports out there that perhaps he'll just end up being on LTIR next year, which, you know, helps the situation to a degree. You know, one of the things to think about in terms of cap space is obviously Quinn Hughes has been tracking towards getting all his bonuses. You know, maybe we're less clear on what happens with Elias Pettersson. He was not on track to collect all his bonuses, which is, you know, in a way, a bit of a relief for the cap space for next year. But, you know, Jay Beagle certainly was an option for a buyout, I think. You know, you look at Roussel as an option as a buyout. You just need to find space. I mean, I've even pondered the idea of Jake Virtanen as a buyout because his buyout actually is really manageable, especially because there's a very small cap hit next year. There's the larger cap hit the year after, but you're also kind of going to be able to trade off for a few other cap penalties at that point. So, you know, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit more of an unusual road, but not nearly as bumpy as some of the other paths you might have to take. So, yeah, I mean, the bio names are the obvious names. We'll see what happens there. But, you know, that's not been something that ownership's been terribly interested in. They certainly weren't interested in going into this season. So, you know, it's not exactly going to be something that's, I think, a slam dunk maneuver either.
PJ, on Jim Benning, and, you know, there's been so much talk around him, right? Especially, you know, for years. I mean, it's been, you know, 7 years, and at every turn, you know, there's been attempts to get Jim Benning out of here. But seeing these moves and seeing everything, do you think this is an indication here that Jim's coming back next season?
Well, I mean, that was one thought I had. I was, you know, talking with someone of those earlier. And, you know, if you really are pursuing re-signing a depth winger, that sure says a lot about, you know, what ownership's authorizing in relation to the interests of management, assuming that that's down to the GM's decision. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly is. It'd be weird. It sure would be a weird one to ask him to negotiate a contract and then show him the door. There's no doubt about that, right? Like, there are others, perhaps in other sports that might happen. But it just seems like such a weird scenario, you know, and then at that point you're sort of like, okay, well, who's in charge? And you assume that it would then mean the GM's still in charge. Certainly we've had ideas earlier this season that may not have been always the case, especially because there is money involved and money is tight. And certainly, you know, we have a lot of other examples to think of that there's been issues related to that. So, yeah, I think it really does raise an interesting question about the dynamic that Jim Benning may be facing going forward.
PJ, a quick thought before we let you go. We do have to hit the break, but password, should it continue or not?
Oh, God, put me on the
spot. Say no.
I can't even play around. Well, Seth, my boy. I got to watch that.
Yes.
I said yes last week, but I'm going no this week.
Wow.
Yes.
Like so Friday, messages. When Sat's not on the show on Friday, you're like, yeah, password's the best. Now Sat's back. You're like, nah, I can't do it.
It's like Eddie Lack. You guys got Eddie Lack to turn around. I got PJ to turn. So
I got to play for the drama here, right? Team chaos. What's he going to say this week?
All right. Fine, PJ. We'll talk next week. Thank you.
Take care, fellas.